On this edition of Radio Survivor, Jennifer Waits tells us about an indie rocker from Vampire Weekend's college radio experience.
Matthew Lassar gives his predictions for the inevitable top classical music piece polls that'll be heading our way this fall.
And Paul and I give our quarterly report.
Yes, it's a different sort of show here on Radio Survivor. I'm Paul Rees-Mandel, and I'm one half of your production and hosting team.
I'm Eric Klein. I'm that other half.
The other half. So, yeah, we're doing things a little different today. This is episode number 12, and to me, that represents we've done a full quarter year, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we were a publicly traded company, which we're not, we would have to give a quarterly report. This could be like our earnings call, right?
Right.
Only there's not a lot of earnings to report.
No, definitely there's none earnings.
But it also seemed like a great opportunity because this is a new endeavor for us to reflect a little bit, because I think, you know, there are reasons why I wanted to do the show, there are reasons why you wanted to do the show, and Jennifer and Matthew also. And, you know, it's very easy to just kind of get into a groove and just keep going, right? And it isn't always the same groove you even thought it would be at episode one when you're in episode 12. And I thought it would be kind of nice for us to talk a little bit about how we think it's going, or where things we'd like to do differently, or questions that still remain unanswered, or that we'd like to pursue even more.
Right.
And why not share that? I mean, that's kind of the great thing. The thing that you always remind me about, Eric, when we're talking about the show offline, is, but this is a podcast.
We're allowed to talk about anything we choose, as long as it doesn't seem useless to the listeners.
Yeah. And for me, I've done a podcast before, but mostly I did a radio show that I distributed as a podcast. So I think about airtime, and I think about a half an hour, and forget about the fact that part of the beauty of podcasting is that looseness, that
right.
You don't have to necessarily adhere to a strict format, although some shows do.
Yeah, well, on the radio, there's always the chance that some stranger, some random person is a every episode is about to stumble upon your show midstream, and so you don't want to waste anybody's time with stuff that doesn't make sense. I mean, you really need to stay focused in a way that the radio is a privilege, but also it casts a broader stream. And here on the podcast, there's not one person who's listening by accident.
I think that's a great point. That it, you know, what we call it in the industry is it's the opt-in experience, mm-hmm. right? Because if you're, you know, with television or radio, people may surf,
yeah.
right? Or they may tune in for one thing and end up staying for another, because programs obviously come off in a stream and are sequential.
Right.
And you might have tuned in for Kitchen Nightmares, but but then it's
God bless you.
Then it's Bar Rescue or something. I don't know. And then the same thing with radio, right? You
right.
tune in for All Things Considered, and maybe then you hear Marketplace. And there is that notion that because radio and television are sort of ubiquitous in being broadcasting, that, you know, we need to be differently respectful,
mm-hmm.
let me say, of people's times. With the Radio Survivor podcast or any podcast, folks went through a lot more effort to listen. Very unlikely that they've accidentally clicked in and started listening to it at any point.
Right. And I think that because it's such a niche, instead of bigger and random, it gives us the privilege to speak in a lot more weird and convoluted detail about the work we're doing. Because we know that we can assume that every single listener it carries with them a certain amount of our knowledge about what we're doing in a way that's totally different.
Yeah, knowledge and probably interest.
Yeah.
So even if you don't come in with a lot of background, we hope that you're learning something. I hope that you and I are learning something
right.
as well every episode, especially when we bring on lots of interesting guests. But I think that both Matthew and Jennifer have taught me something every single episode that we've had. So far, and that's Jennifer Waits, who does our College Radio Watch segment, and Matthew Lassar, who does Lassar's
right.
Letter on Radio.
Yeah, me as well. Like, I had a huge amount of respect and affinity for college radio before this summer. College radio was a big part of my listening experience, and still, based on just listening to Jennifer's segment every week, in the production of this podcast and as a listener. It's completely changed my perspective of the value of college radio in the spectrum of American broadcasting. I love it even more.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazingly rich and deep history, which often is too easily kind of conflated to being, you know, just an impression of sort of like hipsters right. in the basement.
I still somewhere. Think it's because there's no money in it. Right. It's right. like who's going to bother to respect it? Who's going to bother to record the history of it? Who's going to bother to write a magazine, who found a magazine devoted to it, unless there's money to be made? But,
yeah.
But there's reasons to care about it other than.
Than direct and immediate profitability, yeah. I suppose. So now I think we'll go to some headlines. These are some things that we think are important that are going on in the world of radio, and we think that are important to the world of radio. National Radio Day was yesterday as we record. Today we're recording on the 21st of August, and 20th of August was National Radio Day. And that's something we dedicated all of the last program to pretty much, episode number 11. But I thought we'd do a little recap because mm-hmm. I have to say I was pretty impressed with how things went. And this is a holiday which has been sort of celebrated since the 90s. It's come into sort of more popular consciousness in the last few years. But there's a real concerted effort this year. About 25 volunteers started out with me, about 40 stations, all saying we want to bring National Radio Day more to people's consciousness. Mm-hmm. Many stations did events. There was a combined celebration of National Lemonade Day, National Radio Day in Astoria, Oregon. Up in Seattle, they had a cake and had a big party at the Seattle Public Library. And lots of things happened. And some stations did special broadcasts. But it was great watching it on Twitter yesterday. Right.
That's where I experienced the whole thing.
As the hashtag rose and rose and started to be in the trending side on the left hand. It seems like by the end of the day, there were 22,000 tweets
wow.
with the National Radio Day hashtag. And that, just to put perspective, that brings you in as number one or two for the day. So competing along with some news about Caitlyn Jenner and I think Ashley Madison. We were the Ashley Madison hack we were competing with there. And there were over 3,000 posts.
Good company then.
Yeah, great company. Over 3,000 posts on Instagram over the day, also tagged. And, you know, we kept hearing from stations who were joining in, and there were 55 stations let us know that they were doing something to commemorate National Radio Day, and that's in 35 different cities.
What I liked about the hashtag on Twitter when I checked into it was, yes, I follow you and other friends from Radio Survivor Land, and we were using the hashtag. But also there were NPR folks using the hashtag. There were podcast celebrities using the hashtag. There were people that I consider both NPR hosts and podcast celebrities, like Jesse Thorne and Roman Mars, I believe, both mm-hmm. used the hashtag yesterday. Radiotopia, at least, if it wasn't Roman himself. So I thought that was a really neat diversity.
And a lot of commercial stations did too,
yeah.
and talked about it on air. I think a number of syndicated programs made mention of it on air, and also had their listeners tweeting about it as well. And while, you know, we're not specifically about commercial radio here, it's still nice to be reminded that there are people who love, you know, some hosts and DJs on commercial radio,
sure.
and you know, are willing to go to social media to spread the word. Yeah, and you mentioned NPR. It did get mentioned in All Things Considered yesterday afternoon as well. It's great to see people celebrating radio, to hear people celebrating radio. And I think that this is just going to give us more energy for next year.
Yeah. I mean, bringing it back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast, where things I've learned since we started this podcast, and I was already a radio nerd when we did it 3 months ago, but I did not have so much national pride, as it were, in what this country provides to its radio audience until we really started to talk about it together. It's really remarkable. I didn't know that we could be proud of this. And clearly there's room for improvement. And
yeah.
clearly there's been huge changes that might make people sad sometimes. So I'm not being Pollyannish or starry-eyed. But we can be proud of radio.
I think a recap is going to be going up at nationalradioday.com, and I think that will be sort of site of organizing for next year's great celebrations. And there's World Radio Day coming up as well. So, you know, there's plenty more opportunities to celebrate radio.
World Radio Day?
Off the top of my head, I don't know.
Paul has to look it up.
But we can look it up. I know that Dia Mundial de la Radio.
Oh, nice. Of course. When is World Radio Day, Paul?
Well, it was the 13th February 2015.
Oh, okay, darn it.
So it doesn't say – so it's actually sponsored by UNESCO, which is a UN organization. And so I don't know when it's going to be for 2016, but I assume it may be February 13th or somewhere close to February 13th. So we've got another 6 months or so to think about and plan. That's good. They're separated by about 6 months on either side. So good time to get ready and plan for World Radio Day.
Even more fun. We can make up for all the hyper focus on just one country.
Next up, unfortunately, we have some sad news. I just learned today of the passing of an amazing broadcaster and journalist. Her name is Kellia Romares Watson. And Eric, you know, you knew Kellia. So
yeah,
maybe
Kellia was
a
friend of mine
more.
At KPFA. And so I'm very sad about this. And my well wishes are with her loved ones and co-workers at KPFA. What to say? Kellia, like so many of us at KPFA, wore so many hats. And I bring that up because I don't want to define her work at all based on what I know about it. Because I know that she would want to be remembered maybe for stuff that I'm not even aware of that she did at the station for the many, many years before I got there and I met her, but also, yeah, probably stuff that she was working on, when we weren't crossing paths. We crossed paths a lot in the KPFA newsroom where she was very busy all the time, both as a volunteer and a paid worker. And, another great person that I'm so lucky to have crossed paths with at KPFA.
I met her a few times more than a decade ago now, I think, principally through work I did with Indie Media, with the Independent Media Center movement. And I'm trying to remember where I first met her, and it was probably at a national conference for media reform, which is at this point, I think it's semi-annual conference now or biannual, not sure what the right term is, every other year, organized by Free Press, which is a media reform organization. And what struck me about her was, first, she's very warm, but also an incredibly incisive intellect.
Yeah.
She saw through BS was willing to ask hard questions. And in that sort of atmosphere of lots of media reform activists and lots of independent media activists, many of whom are very radical in their politics, it seemed as though she was very much willing to hold everybody's feet to the fire to make sure that, you know, I think you were not being exclusionary,
right. Especially
inadvertently, but that didn't seem to really matter, and really making sure we were being inclusive and thinking about who we are sort of welcoming into our milieu, and that could be across abilities, across gender, sex, race, you know, many different categories, but, you know, really willing to push that question, which I think is a question that always needs to be addressed.
Right.
And I was really, really just constantly impressed with her. And she did great work for, like, Women's International News Gathering Service. I know she did lots of work at KPFA. I understand she started the program Guns and Butter, which I listened to quite a bit. Again, maybe was 10 years ago or so.
I never heard the version of Guns and Butter that was a Kellia Romares production. Mm-hmm. So I'm aware of the show, but not the way that Kellia might have been contributing to it. It was already out of her hands by the time I was at KPFA. What you were talking about with Kellia and her ability to speak truth, not to power, but to her friends in radio, makes me want to just say that I know that she was underemployed at the station, and that's a really important constituency that she represented, was a working class person who had a passion for radio, who needed to pay the rent, and was always struggling to contribute as much as she wanted to or was able to the station while not receiving enough money to do so. And that was a big deal for her. It was also something that that I hope she doesn't mind me saying she would have struggled with, as well as myself. We occupied one of the same spaces at the station, KPFA, where there was a nice amount of paid work, but it shrank in the years that I was there between 2004 and 2011. And I know that that impacted Kelly's ability to stick around. When hours were cut, she wasn't there as much. And so I guess that's something that's worth mentioning, even in her memory, but that that this is a weird thing that stations have to think about and work on, the inclusiveness of the working class. How do you invite people in who don't have as much free time as the privileged?
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And it kind of reminds me of something in podcasting. It was something which – and this is something which I learned about actually from listening to Current's The Pub, because the podcasting, I guess, company called Maximum Fun ended their internship program. And Jesse Thorne, who is the guy who started Maximum Fun and
came from college radio.
Came from college radio.
Took over not national public radio, but I really admire Jesse Thorne's rise from a young person in college radio to a podcast pioneer. And now he's legitimately a part of national public radio.
Yeah. His show Bullseye is distributed by national public
radio. A long road to moderate success for Jesse Thorne.
Exactly. Anyway. In addition to it being a podcast. So I think he's noted that he doesn't actually make so much money from the public radio distribution. That really the podcast brings in more money.
His podcast was one of the first podcasts that somebody ever recommended to me ever. Mm-hmm. Like, number one podcast recommendation in my life was his Sound of Young America podcast, which started as his college radio show.
Yeah, it was something recommended to me early on as well.
And now he has a network, as all successful podcasters inevitably must.
Right.
His network of podcasts bringing together other high-quality content is called Maximum Fun.
Maximum Fun. And he was on The Pub to talk about why Maximum Fun ended its internship program. Mm-hmm. And he said it was because he realized that the people who could afford to do internships were the people who needed the opportunity less.
Yeah.
So an internship often is unpaid or barely paid. So someone who can go to LA, where he's located, to do a Maximum Fun internship needs to be able to afford some kind of standard of living in Los Angeles, which isn't necessarily inexpensive.
Oh, gosh, no. Their parents, perhaps.
You know, live with their parents, or, you know, if they're not from LA, you know, then figure out a way to crash with friends or
live on Jesse's couch. Who knows?
Or have their own money or have mom and dad support them or whatever, you know. And he realized that he wasn't able to give that leg up into public radio, essentially, to the people who he really wanted to because of the sort of the structural limitations of it. And he recognizing that a Maximum Fund, their lean operation, this is not a big company. And so he thought until – I'm paraphrasing here and going on memory, but until they were really able to pay – a living wage to someone who was in an effective internship, he no longer thought it was really – really doing what it needed to do. And this is something which actually The Pub has addressed in a number of episodes, which is a great reason to listen to The Pub because Adam Ragusea, the host, is willing to also push some of these things which are otherwise sore points in public media. Because who in public media or community media for that matter, where you really are mission driven, where you really are by from both a standpoint of sort of inclusion more on the community media side and public service on the public media side, who wants to have to face up to the fact that you're still mostly enabling privileged people to get involved, right? Who come from money or were able to get sort of a more elite education and find opportunities to get in as interns.
Yep.
for low pay or no pay. Who wants to really face up to that? Because it really does run counter to a lot of the narrative and the way we think about these things as being hyper-inclusive. But the same thing is true for community radio in a different way, in that, you know, it's very much volunteer-driven community radio, much more so than public radio.
Right.
But again, to have that time to be able to contribute, especially, you know, in things like journalism, where the amount of time that you spend in production, the ratio of that to airtime is much different compared to doing, you know, playing music. Nothing against having a music show. And these are still points which I think public and community radio and podcasting, for that matter,
right,
need to continually kind of face up to. But I think, you know, you just bring it up reminded me that I think that that's probably – in the spirit of our quarterly report, is probably something we need to right. address.
It is a privilege to podcast in more ways than one.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because I mean, there are people working hard right now in my life to support me to sit here and talk to you.
Yeah,
and I want to acknowledge those people in more ways than one. I don't have to name them.
Yeah, and but, I appreciate that. And I know it's great that you have the time here, you know. And
for now,
right? And you know, and for me, I'm able to do it because I am gainfully employed, which is in a job that gives me some flexibility, and also have a partner who also has a job and provides an additional bit of cushion. Not to take this for granted. And while I do think, you know, if you want to do well in something like podcasting or radio, it often requires a degree of dedication. It does require hard work, but it's not as simple as that in finding the time and the resource, right? And the ability to do it, you know, is not equally distributed.
Yeah.
Everyone has the time and the ability and the resource to do it
right.
the way often the ideology might otherwise indicate.
And I know that this is something that every single person producing podcasts is thinking about today. How do I keep this up? Is it worth keeping up? I mentioned that I'm working on this podcast today to an acquaintance, and his eyes lit up. It was very nice of him to care. And then I told him about how we're about to have this reflection, this quarterly report. And he said that, oh yeah, we're going through the same thing. I have this every 6 to 9 weeks, we put together a poetry reading in Portland that three people are contributing a huge amount of their time to make sure that this is a very successful event. It's not something small that they do, although it's relatively modest. And they are then questioning whether or not they all were going to continue to put in that time. I think it's something that creative people in a lot of ways are wondering.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's time to jump out of headlines here. We're in the conversation now.
We're doing it.
You know, here on, I mean, I feel the need to reset to go on the Radio Survivor podcast.
I don't think they mind.
But you're the one who downloaded it. You're the one who clicked play.
And I do want to mention, I guess it's like resetting to listeners, that we will hear Jennifer's voice mm-hmm. later in the program. We will hear Matthew Lazar's voice. But today we are, me and Paul are pretending it's just a podcast again, where we BS with one another, and hopefully we stay focused. We've talked about, so we are possibly airing on one station that is possibly putting in the time to cut the content down to the nice airable length of a show. But Paul and I have gone back and forth with one another about whether we have the time to deal with that, because we do have some very generous and wonderful invitations to probably air this program on other community stations for no money. And we love that idea. And yet, do we have the extra 4 to 7 hours? I don't want to put too much.
Yeah, but 2 to 4 hours is what I was kind of figuring it would
be. Depends on the show.
Depends on the show and depends on
the week. Last week's episode would have definitely taken me more than 4 hours to – well, I could have made a very brutal cut mm-hmm. that would have not taken as much time. But if I wanted to include all of the information and just shorten it,
right.
That would have been a tremendous amount of work to get it down to 59 minutes.
I mean, I think, you know, to get a kind of sense of that, just think about a show like 99% Invisible by Roman Mars. It is an expertly, amazingly well-produced show.
Professionally.
And Roman is a great broadcaster, and now he's surrounded himself in working with great podcasters and broadcasters.
Yeah, radio producers, I would call them.
But how long is 99% Invisible per episode? It's minutes.
Yeah, but you know, he has the same problem. He actually does, I'm not certain of the exact numbers, but he, in order to be aired on some stations in the country, puts in the extra effort, or one of his staff members, to cut it down to the exact length necessary for it to air in a particular window on, I believe,
all sorts of public stations. Yeah,
so I guess it's like a 7-minute window. So they have the podcast that they can be open-ended with their time.
But it tends to be like 10, 12 minutes, right? But just to kind of put some numbers to it, if we look at 99% Invisible kickstarted.
Yes.
Several seasons.
Right. Well, and it's worth mentioning, if you didn't already know, that Roman Mars, the producer of 99% Invisible, might have been the first legit radio producer to put Kickstarter to work for his program.
Right.
I mean, his success, I think starting 4 years ago, raising the funds for his podcast, made me sit up and take notice. And I sent it to all my friends. Like, have you seen this?
Yeah.
He made money.
In November 2013, which I think is the last time he had a Kickstarter directly for 99% Invisible. Mm-hmm. Now he's part of the Radiotopia Network at PRX. It brought in $375,000, right? And that was to produce another season.
So to hire people.
To hire people. It just gives you a sense of these numbers. And, you know, that's a lot of money. And you know, but he probably, I would hope, is paying people a pretty good living wage, a fair living wage to do this work.
I know that one of his stretch goals from this particular drive on Kickstarter, it's funny to call it a drive, like a radio drive. One of his stretch goals was, great, we did it. I can pay these people. Now I would like to provide them with decent health care.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that that's really fair. And at Radio Survivor in general, for the website, which we have been publishing for more than 6 years, and now for the podcast, we have to think about this time we put in, which we do have a fundraiser going on at patreon.com/radiosurvivor. Right. And that money does help us kind of pay bills associated, but we're still at the point at which it's really not enough to pay for labor. Yeah. And just being completely honest and straightforward, it's enough to kind of cover what it costs for us to host it, and a lot of, you know, various other costs that we incur to do it. But it really isn't enough to pay for labor at this point.
Right.
And that, you know, and for you and me talking about doing the podcast, which I'm greatly enjoying, I'm greatly appreciate that you're willing to do this with me, right? That extra few hours it would take, or the extra either in planning so that we're a little bit more tight with our time and a little bit more able to walk in and kind of execute like it were a live show, I suppose, or the time on the back end to edit, it's been too much for me. And, it's been too much for you, in part because we have to dedicate that time to other responsibilities and other activities. Sometimes those responsibilities and activities also pay us.
Right.
we are, you know, we do still trade our labor for money.
Thank God. when we're lucky. Yeah, it's, and then there's such an interesting trade-off it might be way too inside now, but here we go. If we put in that time, perhaps we would grow the audience because we'd be on the radio and people could discover us. And then the trade-off, in addition to the amount of work it would be, was I wonder what would we lose as far as form and content?
Yeah.
What's fun about a podcast that we would have to give up? We would have to check ourselves to not waste any time with questions. And some of those questions might be the most fun questions we weren't planning to ask.
Yeah.
Questions that occurred to us in the spur of the moment, questions that would certainly put us over time if we were watching a clock. And that kind of stuff, that kind of silliness, I think is worth preserving in one form or another, even if it gets cut out of a radio show.
Yeah, I think that if we were to do a radio-ready version, I would want to make that a different version. I'd want to preserve the podcast version and then have an air-ready that we'd make available to stations. Because we may want to – there may be an occasion in which we really need to air something which is too challenging for the indecency standards of radio.
Mm-hmm.
And we would want to censor ourselves only because of that. I happen to feel strongly that even though we're a podcast and so then we can use whatever language you want, I think that if we choose to use some more indecent language in the FCC's term, it needs to be very well justified.
Yeah.
I'd like to make the show as sort of widely accessible as possible. And sometimes accessibility does include language for all sorts of reasons. But I think I'd want to leave the door open to tackling some more difficult concepts or ideas if there were a controversy or perhaps some art we wanted to share that where we wouldn't want to interfere with the artist's intent, which I would not want to do at this point, to preserve that. But I mean, so that's one of the questions that you and I have been tossing back and forth, and people can see clearly right now there is not a broadcast version. We've not been able to sort of crest that wave. But part of it as well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the, you know, just the topics we cover. I mean, we talked a little bit here, and I wonder if we're getting to these questions yet. We've had some, I mean, in questions like what makes good radio? Why Right. make community radio? Or, you know, what is the role of podcasting right now?
Right.
You know, for especially for community and college and low power FM stations, but really in radio in general.
Not to mention, why are we doing this?
God,
which
why
is
why am I doing this?
Well, and this reminds me of how this all started. I think, I don't know, I mean, you and I were meeting for coffee on a quarterly basis, just as a coincidence, here in Portland, and we were talking about the possibility of podcasting, and we had a series of conversations, like trying to figure out, like, who do we think the audience is?
Yeah,
what do we think the audience would want? And I don't remember the answers.
No, I have notes. I could go back and look. I mean, I think that, and to some extent, you know, I think we were saying, you know, it was people who are getting into low power FM or who are right. doing low power FM, people in community radio, people are interested about the behind the scenes. And you know, and I think that it's clear that there are people interested in what goes into making art. If and to making media, I mean, if you see, you know, sort of behind the scenes sorts of things, whether in sort of the mainstream media are sort of mm-hmm. popular, or even you have Gimlet Media startup podcast,
right.
the first, you know, season of which was to look behind the creation of a podcast network,
right.
you know, which was theirs. And, you know, and for us not to be strictly meta, but to be taking on issues that are, I think, of import to the larger culture and as seen through this lens.
I have a new person or group to add to the list since we've started.
Yeah.
And it's people, either young people or not. I mean, college students or not. But I think there's a group of them that are college aged and who in previous decades would have gone into radio and are now thinking about podcasting instead.
Right.
And I didn't think about those people in that way until this started. That it's
yeah.
it's not necessarily such a you know, I wouldn't give anybody advice who is 19 to try to get on the air at a community radio station right now. It depends. I guess it depends.
I would give them advice to do it. It's not necessarily something that they can expect to get paid for anytime soon.
That's one thing. But then another thing that's, I don't know if this is for every station, mm-hmm. but a lot of people have really strong ideas about what they want to create. And I think that a lot of community radio stations don't need those people. They don't need somebody who's like, I want to do a talk show about housing issues. I mean, I guess some community stations do, but there are stations that are not going to accept that level of assuredness that this is the content I want to do. Stations actually just need open-minded volunteers who are ready to fit in.
Well, I hear you say culture. That, and I think that's because your experience in community radio has been at relatively large, popular stations,
yeah.
right?
Institutions.
Where there isn't a surplus of empty airtime. But if you go outside and you even just go to a smaller city with an established station, often there is empty airtime, okay. airtime which is ready to be filled.
Where they need the opposite of what I just said.
Yeah.
They need someone with a good plan.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that was my experience, certainly at WEFT in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, where certainly there are some time slots filled up, but there would be plenty, any given month, there was probably some spot somewhere in the schedule that was ready for something interesting or different. If you had the sort of ability to put it together and to try it out. And I think that's also true in cities that are more like 250,000, 150,000 and smaller. Their community stations often have that kind of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree, at many established stations with large listenerships in larger metro areas where they often were for a long time, the only community station and the only one with that kind of public access, there's less of that availability. You know, and I think having been in those community stations where there was more time, you know, flexibility is important as well, because stations very rarely give carte blanche. And so often we'll have feedback for your ideas.
Which is great.
And that's the thing. I think, right, as part of the creative process and making radio that more people want to hear, it's a really necessary process. With podcasting, you do have the opportunity to just do that thing you really, really want to do and see if anyone will listen or cares.
Right.
It makes you ultimately responsible in some ways.
Especially for spreading the word.
Exactly.
But I mean, for caring about what you sound like.
Yeah. In exchange for the airtime on a community station, you get built-in listeners, right? There's people already there ready to listen to you that you didn't have to kind of earn from the beginning. That's why there's a bit of that trade-off, right? That where you kind of, you know, have to develop your idea a little bit more and maybe listen to the input of other people. You know, I would say when you read a lot of advice for podcasters coming from within the podcasting community, most of them say, hey, you want to bounce your ideas off other people. You want to get people's input. You want to get critical feedback.
Yeah.
If you want there to be listeners.
Have we gotten critical feedback?
Yes, I think so. I mean, we haven't had a ton.
We ask for it.
I would love to get more. Send it to us.
I want people to know that it is not just us blowing smoke. We really do want to hear from everybody who's listening.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah. podcast@radiosurvivor.com or tweet us at Radio Survivor. Or if you're on Facebook, go to our Facebook page, however you want to do it. Yeah, we got some critical feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to name names, but a person who is involved in sort of a hybrid college community station said, hey, I'd love to air the show. Really has to be a half an hour. And he was actually responding to an early conversation that we had on the show about the length. And he said, you know, I really disagree with you. I think it's really important to have the discipline of going for a clock, even with a podcast. And it's a point well taken. He and I had a good back and forth on email. And while, you know, I don't agree with him 100%, I think it's an incredibly valid perspective. And I was talking to John Anderson last week. I was out on the East Coast, who was a guest of ours.
Episode 2 or 3, I believe.
Yeah, I can't remember now.
Yeah.
I don't have an index in front of me at DIYmedia.net. And he was telling me, well, I really wish, you know, sometimes I just want to listen, go straight to the feature.
Right. Which is my favorite part of the show, too, when we talk to somebody who knows something that we don't know.
He said, I wish it were easier to do that, you know. And that's a critical, interesting perspective. And maybe that's something that you as a listener also wish there were more accessibility to. And you could tell us about that as well. So we've gotten some critical feedback. I think we've gotten some positive critical feedback. Just because it's positive doesn't mean someone isn't thinking critically about it. You know, it's this interesting process, I think, of doing this, especially because we in podcasting with RadioSurvivor.com, we created our own platform. We're not really hooking on. We're not, you know, we're not getting really promoted by anybody else, although we've got some nice coverage from Radio World in particular.
Hmm.
But, you know, we really had to make it ourselves. And when you do that, I think, you know, and you sort of see the hours you're spending every week and every day, it does cause, at least for me, that critical reflection is this worth my time? Am I enjoying it? And are we accomplishing something?
Yeah.
And it's difficult to know what those metrics are. I mean, you can look at listenership, you know, and our listenership is surpassed my initial expectations, but is not huge.
Right.
It's less with the exception of our first episode, every single one of them is fewer than 1,000 listeners, which includes downloads.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny, though, because my heart did not sink when you just said no. That. I thought you were going to say fewer than 300.
No, we generally surpass 300. I think all the episodes after they've been out for about 2 weeks surpass 300, often get to 4 or 5, sometimes higher, but only one has surpassed 1,000. And on the one hand, that's an amazing accomplishment. I don't think that that's a small accomplishment.
It's the best podcast I've ever worked for.
You know, and it's and especially given our subject matter, which, you know, is not as broadly sort of desired as comedy or celebrity gossip.
I describe it to strangers as very, very nerdy.
Yeah, it's very nerdy, but it's even as not as sort of popular as nerdy podcasts about, right. You know, Apple Macintosh or about, you
the
know,
history of the internet.
The history of the internet. That's a great podcast, yeah. By the way. You know, it is even more sort of arcane and has a smaller audience. And yet, isn't that supposed to be one of the great things about podcasting?
Right.
Is that you can create programming for small audiences that maybe yet nobody knows how to, quote unquote, monetize.
Right. And, you know, I guess this brings us back, and I feel both ways. I think that we should keep the podcast and never, you know, the audience shouldn't be small on purpose, but I don't want to try to broaden the audience by broadening the topics away from the things that we think are important. I like that we're only talking about the kind of radio that we love and that we're only talking about radio. And so I don't know if that's a show that's a hit.
Well, I don't think we need to be a hit. You know, I mean, part of it is, to me, you know, it's like a hit, you know, is a particular thing, right?
Advertising money.
You know, or even putting that aside, just, you know, the big, big numbers, you know, and then in podcasting, a hit means you've got 100,000 or more downloads, right. Probably. That's a hit.
And those are people that then can make a living wage off their time that they put into it via the advertising.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much you can. Yes. And sometimes even with smaller numbers, depending on how many shows you put out and on a number of variables. But certainly at that level, you're talking about people who can certainly get a living wage, mm-hmm. from their podcast. And I don't know that we need to have a hit. And yeah, or that's something nice. that I'm striving for, because, I mean, community radio is niche media to begin with.
Right.
You know, but that it would be wonderful for this to be sustainable. I mean, and we had the same questions at radiosurvivor.com on the website. For a lot of years, we had display advertising, which we got through Google, right? Because it's very easy to sign up, very easy to put it up. But you don't really make very much money on it.
Right.
And really,
pennies.
To make a lot of money on it, you need to have hundreds of thousands or millions of hits a month, and Radio Survivor is nothing close to that. Although,
and we've all seen what the internet looks like when it's designed to achieve that goal.
That's right. And we sometimes would experiment or write posts that we knew would have a little bit more sort of
Google juice.
Viral oomph, Google juice, you know. And you know, and sometimes these were things I wanted to write. Like when Philip Seymour Hoffman died, I wrote a piece about him because I loved his performance in Pirate Radio and in the movie, and they sort of went together. And, you know, so you have one day and your hits go up, and then the next day they're back where they were. And you make like $10, literally, maybe if you were lucky that day from that big – increase in traffic. And so that's why we started our Patreon fundraiser, and we were able to set a milestone which we hit early on, right.
a very modest one, and yet so exciting, because why do people give $1,
yeah.
for something they get for free?
Well, I mean, that's public radio, that's community radio, it's a bunch of podcasting, yeah. Maximum Fun actually survives quite a bit on people, right. who fund the network voluntarily rather than strictly through ads or through other means.
To buy a little slice of happiness.
I mean, that's it, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
participation.
Yeah.
Community.
And, but I wanted to say is that, you know, we did that and allowed us to get rid of the display, right. advertisements altogether.
On the blog.
Got rid of all of our display advertisements. And, you know, Matthew wrote a great piece about how he felt freed up. He said, okay, now I feel like, you know, even though no one was ever stopping us from writing about the things we most care about, there's always in the back of your head, well, is this going to bring in any traffic? And I think, you know, what I've noticed then is some of the posts that are definitely those kind of slightly more narrow posts or sort of more arcane posts get a lot of comments.
Hmm.
Like people, like there are okay. things that other people go, oh yeah, because it's a little more exciting. It's a little more, there's a little more verve.
The things that are most interesting.
Joie de radio.
The things that are most interesting to the least people.
Yeah.
So the least valuable to advertisers.
Right.
Become the most valuable to you as an intellectual.
Often, or our readers, right. or somebody else who also says, oh, I have strong opinions about that. So, I mean, I think that's what we will continue to kind of be figuring out on the podcast. We're not going to talk about this every single show.
No, this is a special show.
If we're going to talk about this every quarter even, we're just sort of playing with it. But, you know, we certainly want to hear from you. Send us your comments to podcast@radiosurvivor.com. Go to radiosurvivor.com because we do publish news there every single weekday. You can find our bulletin, which is our free weekly newsletter, which has extra stuff in it. We'll just say extra stuff, but it's about college radio, low power FM, FCC, scholarship, interesting things. You sign up for it there, radiosurvivor.com/bulletin.
Oh my gosh. Well, did we address everything we had set out to address?
Probably not.
No, of course not. I mean, I guess I want to talk more than about just in case there was something else. Who else we should be talking to?
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about anyway. So yeah, was there, I really enjoyed, for instance, the accidental discovery in the last episode of someone who was excited to be founding a new community radio station.
The Philly Cam. Yeah.
And it was just, it was nice to hear that voice. I don't know if it's necessary to always talk to people founding radio stations to get that perspective.
But I think you're right. I think that's talking to people who are creating great radio,
yeah.
want to create planning to create great radio or great podcasts or something that is radio like, I think because there's these stories and experiences. And I don't think that I've done a good job as an interviewer really getting the stories out of people.
Right.
We had kind of a news hook in talking to right. Vanessa at Philly Cam, which really took my eye off that ball of getting the story. I think we got more of a story from Bainbridge Community Broadcasting.
Right.
And because I think those are not only are they interesting and fascinating just on a kind of empathetic level, but there's a lot of good stuff for people who care about radio and want to make great radio. It's a lot of good stuff for them to mine
right.
and learn from.
Which is one of the reasons why I've fantasized about interviewing every single one of our listeners. Because it's my assumption that every single one of our listeners knows in their own unique way something about great radio. Now, obviously, this is totally bonkers to want to do that.
And yet, it's not bonkers. It's not bonkers to want to, and I don't even think it would be bonkers to try. It's as long as we accept it's sort of asymptotic. We will approach the achievement, but we will never be able to get there because we'll always be approaching it by halves. Email us podcast@radiosurvivor.com, even if it's just for 3 minutes, for you to tell us your thoughts on radio now, whether it's podcasting, internet radio, community radio, LPFM, college radio, public radio, commercial radio. I think, you know, if we can make this a more open-ended platform,
right.
because we can, because the only structural barriers to stop us from doing that is us, really. I think I'd like to do that. And that's, you know, that's why I like working with you, Eric, because you come at you, that's often your impulse and I love it. I really appreciate that is where you come from. And when you have this, every time we sort of hear an interesting comment or we hear maybe even secondhand, you're like, oh, I want to talk to that person. And I think that's a wonderful impulse for us to keep nurturing here at the podcast,
cool.
Because I'm not always sure it's natural to me, and I would prefer it were natural to me. So it's good that you're bringing that here.
That's good.
And I think that brings to an end our quarterly report for the Radio Survivor podcast.
Up next on the program, we have College Radio Watch with Jennifer Waits.
So, Paul, I have a couple of interesting college radio stories to share this week. And the first one I found out about, I was reading an article in Billboard magazine in which they interviewed somebody from the band Vampire Weekend, and he was offering advice to college students. And in that interview, he talked about some college radio memories that he had from his time when he was at Columbia. And he was a DJ and eventual music director at the Barnard College radio station, WBAR, which is housed in dingy basement digs that are infested with roaches and vermin, and actually visited back in 2009, so probably a few years after he graduated. But Chris Baio of Vampire Weekend talks a bit about how that time in college radio was really influential for him as a musician. And I'm going to quote from the Billboard piece, and he said, "I loved doing college radio. I would spend all week getting ready to do a show on the internet from 2 to 4 a.m. for 0 to 3 listeners. But during my 2 hours there, I'd get to go through this incredible, well-curated library and just listen to stuff. That's where I think I was able to form a lot of my tastes. I sort of stopped making music from the time I was 18 to the time I was 21, and I think that was very important for me. Now when I think about what I like and what I listen to." And it's interesting, the person who interviewed him for Billboard followed up about, you know, so what was it like to be on from 2 to 4 a.m.? And, you know, I bet there wasn't a lot of competition for those time slots. And he actually countered that. He said, "I got rejected the first time. I got turned down. Another piece of advice would be not to worry about rejection. The second time, I dusted myself off, got that 2 to 4 a.m. slot, and by senior year, I was music director. So that's a real success story." So it's interesting, even today at WBAR, it's apparently the most popular student activity on campus is the radio station. So even though it's in a basement and is online only, it's a real hub of activity.
And Vampire Weekend is sort of known, as even though it's a rock band, for being a little eclectic, and they sort of integrate some sounds from what is often called like world beat music or world music, right? Rather than just sort of a straightforward kind of indie rock sound.
Yeah, I know that they've been influenced by a lot of different genres, and it totally makes sense that they would have members who were former college radio music directors, you know, who typically are seeing all kinds of music coming into a station.
You're a college radio enthusiast, but why is it still exciting to hear that, you know, somebody who's kind of a rock star and also a fairly young rock star cites his college radio experience as important or maybe even pivotal in his sort of development as a musician?
Well, I think a lot of people need to be reminded of the importance of college radio and the influence that it might have on people as they're developing their careers. And, you know, not even necessarily as a pre-professional activity, but that it can be a seminal experience for college students and a place where you can spread your wings, you can be creative, but you can also run a business, you can put on big concerts. So, you know, it always adds a little extra bit of credibility when somebody who's made it talks about their time in college radio being really important to them.
And in another story, you've got a contest, which is open to college students.
Yeah, kind of an interesting contest. On the Radio Survivor podcast, we've talked about Next Radio before, which is an app where you can listen to FM radio on your phone. So you're actually listening to a terrestrial signal from your phone. And there have been efforts to publicize this feature, this Next Radio app and feature that's available on many smartphones. And so as part of the efforts to publicize it, there's a contest happening right now that College Broadcasters Inc., which we also refer to as CBI, they're working with Next Radio to put on this contest in which they're inviting students to record 60-second ads promoting the Next Radio app. And I guess the exciting part of it is that the winner will have their ad featured among the rotation of ads that are being broadcast on various stations all over the country who have signed on to help promote the next radio app. And then in addition to that, the winner is going to get a paid trip to the next CBI convention, which is called the Student Electronic Media Convention. And that's happening in Minneapolis in October. So they get to win exposure over the radio, and they also win a trip to Minneapolis. And then there are also some prizes for second and third place winners. The second place winner gets paid registration to the conference and a one-night hotel stay for the conference. And the third place winner gets paid registration for the conference.
And Next Radio, the app, which they're promoting, which turns on basically or gives access to the FM radio that's embedded in many Android phones, as well as connects up listeners to internet broadcasts. Does it have college radio in it? Can I find college radio stations on Next Radio?
Yeah. So on Next Radio, you can listen to any radio station that you could pick up on, say, your car radio in your local area. So it really just depends on what terrestrial stations come in your area. So if you happen to be near a college radio station, you'll be able to pick it up.
So what's the deadline for any college radio broadcaster who'd like to enter this contest?
So anybody who's a full-time student is eligible to enter the contest now through September 18th. And then the winning ad will start airing after October 1st.
Cool. And where do they find more information?
You can find out more information on either the CBI website or on the Next Radio website. And we actually wrote about it on Radio Survivor as well. So if you look in the archives for College Radio Watch, you can get some scoop there as well.
And of course, we'll put that in our show notes for this episode, which will be at radiosurvivor.com/podcast. So Jennifer, you know, this is our 12th episode. So we've been doing these weekly College Radio Watch spots on the podcast for about a quarter, for about 3 months. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit to find out, like, how this is going for you as a new enterprise and how you're enjoying it and what you think about doing a podcast.
I'm really enjoying it. I can't believe it's been 12 weeks already. For me, I have a long history in radio, but I am a music DJ in college radio, so I play music and talk about it. But I don't have as much experience doing public affairs programming or interviews, although I do interview bands on my show occasionally. So for me, it's kind of a new, fun radio challenge to be doing the podcast and talking about college radio, which I write about every week. So for me, that's been really fun. I think it also gives me the chance to expand upon some of the things that we're writing about on Radio Survivor. So, you know, we talked about the Princeton Review most popular college radio station list the other week. And in listening back to that podcast, I realized that the way we were explaining it just conversationally, perhaps people might understand that particular story a little bit better if they're listening to it versus reading a story about it. So I like that we're providing all these different ways to get at the information that we're trying to share.
What's interesting to me, of course, is that, you know, we could take advantage of technology at this time that would have been difficult to do 10 years ago at the start of podcasting, or if we'd made this a radio show 10 years ago, because you and I are able to talk and record every week, where you're in San Francisco, I'm in Portland, Oregon, and it's relatively seamless despite, you know, an occasional technical hiccup. I mean, how's it for you doing this, you know, from your house and not in a radio studio and not, you know, in your typical radio environs?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, you know, because we've recorded it where I'm in San Francisco and you're in Portland. We've recorded it where I'm talking to you and Eric at the same time, but we're in different places. And then we also record an episode where we were all three in the same room. And I'd be curious if to listeners, it sounds different. If, you know, can they tell when we're in the same room and when we're not in the same room? So it is pretty miraculous the way technology works. It was certainly fun the one time we were able to all record in person. that probably did have a slightly different energy to it, but I feel like, you know, even recording with you remotely, it still feels like a radio show to me or a podcast to me. I don't know. It's the magic. It's the magic of technology, I guess.
Yes, and it is pretty amazing that we're able to do this this way. And for me, I really appreciate that we're able to get a contribution from you every week and get a contribution from Matthew every week, because as people may know, you, Matthew, and I, we're the co-founders of Radio Survivor. And it's and even though I've sort of took on the role of making sure it started, it was really critical and really important to me that it represent all of our voices in some way, shape, or form. So I hope that you're feeling like you're having a chance to express yourself and talk about the things that excite you on a podcast.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm really glad that all of our voices are on the podcast. That's what makes it Radio Survivor. You know, having the three core people participate every week, and you know, and I love that Matthew's contribution is uniquely Matthew, and my contribution is uniquely me. You know, so people are getting even more of a sense of our personalities through the podcast in addition to our writing.
Absolutely. Well, I'm looking forward to the next quarter. Maybe we'll do a quarterly review again in episode 25. Or so, 24, and see how things are going then. Of course, until the next episode, people should definitely check out your weekly College Radio Watch features. And they're easy to find. Just go to radiosurvivor.com and click on College Radio, or just make sure you go every Friday because it'll be featured up there on the front page. And of course, anything we talked about will be on our show notes, radiosurvivor.com/podcast. Well, thanks, Jennifer, and I'm looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Yeah, me too. Thanks.
So thanks for that College Radio Watch, Jennifer and Paul. And you know what I love is the idea of thinking out loud with your partner, with your writing partner, as opposed to writing by yourself and having it, you know, be read. The value of the podcast, how it does allow you to develop new ideas with the looseness of talking, of having a conversation with someone who cares about what you're saying, and things that you would never have blogged come out.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a really great point, and it certainly is one of the reasons why I enjoy doing the show. So I concur with Jennifer and with you on that point. And now, we'll hear from Matthew Lessar in Lessar's Letter on Radio.
This is Matthew Lessar with Lessar's Letter on Radio for the Radio Survivor podcast. It's the middle of August. What better time to start thinking about those "What is your favorite classical music piece?" polls that classical music radio stations pester their listeners for during the winter holidays. I predict that the following three compositions will make the top five of every one of those top 100 lists. First, next, and finally, that would be Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, Beethoven's Seventh Symphony, and Beethoven's Fifth Piano Concerto. How do I know they'll be picked? Because those three pieces always show up on those lists. Why? Well, to be fair, because Beethoven was a very talented dude and all that, but also because classical radio stations play his music all the time. So the poll basically turns into a mirror of what most classical radio stations broadcast. Is this insane? As you know, Einstein defined insanity as doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. But I'm not sure that most classical radio stations actually are looking for a different result, so maybe insanely boring is the right phrase. In any event, what's the alternative? Well, there are two eccentric possibilities. First, the top 100 weirdest classical pieces ever. For me, number one would be Erik Satie's Vexations. The pianist of this composition is required to repeat the same very Satie-esque passage 840 times straight, which takes about 19 hours. This turns pianistry into a challenge not just in musicianship, but in fact an exercise in continence. Okay, before you get all negative about this idea, I should tell you that one radio station has actually aired the program, Hollow Earth Radio in Seattle, so don't tell me it can't be done. The second possibility, the most obscure classical pieces ever. Ever heard of Scheidt, Schutt, Scharwenka, Frescobaldi? When was the last time you heard Ketelby's piece in a Persian garden? Okay, maybe that was the last time you want to hear it. More realistically, I think the best thing to do is to ask listeners not for a list of their favorite compositions, but their favorite living performers. My favorites would probably be the Japanese pianist Mitsuko Yoshida or the Russian pianist Valentina Lisitsa, here playing a bit of the last movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. Lisitsa has all kinds of, shall we say, spicy opinions about the Ukrainian conflict that she shares on our Twitter account. But wouldn't a classical radio list celebrating the unpredictable living rather than the predictable dead be more interesting? I think so. This is Matthew Lasar with Lasar's Letter on Radio, reminding you to give the vexingly unexpected a chance. In fact, I think I'm going back to Satie now. See you in 19 hours.
Thank you, Matthew.
Well, I think this is another of our over hour long shows.
I hope people don't mind that this time we let loose.
We did. And let us know. I mean, we sort of bring up because we both have this inclination to pull back the curtain a little bit into this, not to be a slick production, although we want it to be listenable. And if it's not listenable, we'd certainly like to hear from you because that's good feedback. Mm-hmm. We appreciate critical feedback. We don't only want to hear kudos. We do want to hear what is not only you want to hear, but what is useful, what is informative and I hope to some extent entertaining.
I think I always like it when people on podcasts chat, as long as they're speaking from direct experience and not saying, you know, I read this thing, and then they don't remember what they read. And then they say, oh, you know, we should really find out the answer to this question, and then they don't answer it. But I don't think we did that. I think we talked about stuff that has been important to us as we produce this podcast, but we've kept to ourselves. And I don't mind sharing it, I hope. I'm going to have to listen to this and then decide what I really do think. But I think that this is a conversation worth having out loud.
Great.
This time.
Yeah, this time. And we promise it will not be constantly a meta conversation.
No, we want to talk to other people who know stuff that we don't know.
We really do. And so if you're one of those people or you know one of those people or there's someone that you just – something you just wish we would cover, please let us know. podcast@radiosurvivor.com is our email. We do try to answer every single email we get. And, of course, you know, our website is radiosurvivor.com. Hey, and if you get a chance, please review us. Drop some stars or write an actual review over at iTunes. It does help us get noticed, which brings in more listeners. And we hope that bringing more listeners spreads the word of great radio. There's a purpose for it. It's not just for its own end. So if you would do that, we're easy to find. You just search for Radio Survivor. Please review us or drop us some stars.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Eric.